I should open that up. Attendees. I don't see anyone in the waiting room yet, so I would imagine BCAT will probably jump on here any minute, though. They're usually pretty prompt.
Speaking of BCAT, I noticed they were on the last one. Are they filming and then broadcasting it later, or is it broadcasting live?
Yeah, actually, they are. In fact, I bet that's, yep, see, they're on now as an attendee. So they are, like I said, attending as a, or as an attendee, and then they also are broadcasting on, I want to say they're like every other Wednesday night, they alternate between the Planning Commission recording, if there's a recent one, and the Hearing Examiner.
Okay.
So that they're doing it both ways. And then I don't think it's a live stream, but, you know, it's still recorded and available. Okay, so I just got a message from John, and I'm going to send him a new link to see if I can't get him logged in here.
Okay.
Just a moment.
Mike, are we going to implement your new agenda idea of comments?
Right tonight, because it is a special meeting agenda, we're just going to have commissioner comments and good of the order. And we had an agenda setting meeting last week with Amanda and Dave and Angie, and we've retitled it. We're going to call it announcements,
okay,
which include staff, it encompasses everything. And it's already on the draft agenda, which Amanda will publish, assuming at the conclusion of this meeting. And it'll be right after public comment, so it gives the opportunity for the commission to have that discussion. And then if any of the commissioners want to respond to anybody who spoke in public comment. So as I mentioned, the email, we'll give it a run, see how it works. If it works, great, we'll keep it. If not, we'll get rid of it.
Try again.
Yep. Is that Angie? Got half of you, Angie.
Hello, everyone.
Hi.
Angie's being shy today.
Actually, I just got home. We had a long day today.
Yeah, and I didn't help matters because I tied her up a little bit today, but boy, is she great at customer service.
No, Mike, you were the easy part of my day, so I appreciated our conversation.
Great. Well, I appreciated your quick response. I sent you an email, and within moments, you were calling me. I appreciate it.
No, I had to go off site and check in on a staff member, so wasn't good. But yeah, I did appreciate our conversation.
Alrighty, so John should be joining us in just a moment. He's got the link going.
We're past our start time, so let's go ahead and call the meeting to order, and then we can just pause and we have to wait. Does that work with everybody?
Sure.
So Kitsap County Planning Commission meeting, special meeting of Tuesday, May 12th, 2020, 5:30 p.m., actually 5:32 now, will come to order. First item of business is introductions. I learned from the last meeting that people are positioned in different locations. So let's start at the south end and then work our way north. So introductions, Commissioner Galloway.
Ed Galloway, South Kitsap.
And the only representative from South right now, Kim Allen, has notified us that she could not be present today. However, she's planning to attend the regular meeting next week. And so far, we haven't heard from Commissioner Svensson. I know he had some technical difficulties. He was having to upgrade his systems, and evidently he hasn't been able to do that in time, so we'll miss him as well. So Central District, Commissioner Shattuck.
Yes, good evening. My name is Richard Shattuck. I'm with the Central Kitsap District.
Okay, Sean Beam.
Good evening. My name is Alan Beam. I'm from Central Kitsap District.
Okay. And Mike Eliason, Central Kitsap. North Kitsap, ladies first, Commissioner Mall.
Amy Mall, North Kitsap.
Great. And last but not least, the guy with the great background, our vice chairperson.
Joe Phillips, North Kitsap.
Great. Okay, first is our next agenda item is B, virtual meeting protocol. We went over this previously, I'm sure people remember. And of course, on page two, you'll find details of the protocol for the meeting since we've gone to virtual. And Amanda has changed a few of the items so the members of the public understand how to be called on during public meetings. And then when we get to that point in the public hearing, I'm sure Amanda can restate that if we have any other attendees. So far, I think we just have BCAP staff. Okay, next item is adoption of the agenda, item C. Are there any additions or corrections to the agenda? Okay, hearing none, we'll entertain a motion to adopt the agenda as presented.
Move to adopt the agenda as written.
Okay, is there a second?
Second.
Okay, motion by Commissioner Phillips, second by Commissioner Beam to adopt the agenda as presented. All those in favor say aye and raise your hand.
Aye.
Aye.
Okay, all those opposed? And abstentions, motion carries. Okay, item D, public hearing, Title 11, road standards code update. And now's the point where we will pause and hopefully John Brand will be here.
What excellent timing.
Yeah, perfect. That worked out great. Good evening. We just finished our third agenda item and now we're on to item D, public hearing, road standards. And you logged in just in right at the right time.
You are still muted though, John. There we go.
Okay, are there any comments that you would like to make before we open our public hearing tonight?
Well, not specifically, other than thank you for the opportunity to be here. And I think we went over everything last time in the work study. We appreciate your time and patience last time. So we're available if you guys have any questions. Or right. We're hopeful that you guys will recommend approval of this to the commissioners and we can move forward.
Great, thank you. What we're planning to do tonight is we'll conduct the public hearing, I'm assuming, but we'll see the commission might vote to extend to allow written testimony after tonight for those members of the public who could not participate. And then at the conclusion of the public hearing, if you guys are still available and the commissioners are interested, we might pose some follow-up questions to you, if that's okay.
All right.
As I mentioned, you'd be here. And the first thing, before we open the public hearing, I want to mention that as a follow-up to the previous meeting, the Public Works staff presented an email to all of the commissioners that we can enter into the public record. Of course, it was as soon as the email was sent, but I just wanted to mention it during tonight's public hearing, and I thought you did a real thoughtful job addressing a lot of the issues that were raised during the previous meeting.
Well, thank you.
So let's open our public hearing, Title 11 Road Standards Code Update. And my time is showing 5:37 p.m., if that's correct.
That's what I have.
Public hearing. This is the opportunity for members of the public to testify about the proposed road standards, Title 11. Amanda, do we have any written testimony that has been submitted to you so far?
We have not received any, no.
Okay, no written testimony to this point. And are there any attendees who would like to present any information to the Planning Commission? If so, you indicate by selecting the raise hand.
Mm-hmm. I don't see any hands raised, and ultimately we'd have no call-in attendees, so there are no audio indications for raised hands either.
I wasn't going to mention that part. That's okay. Sorry about that. Yeah. We got high ratings tonight.
That's okay. Our feelings aren't hurt.
Yeah, yeah.
I do have one one suggestion on this. I really would recommend that we keep the record open for comment until our standard meeting date. It would just kind of appear that if we have a special meeting and we pass we vote on it without any input on a regular meeting, that it doesn't look as well as it should.
Oh, absolutely. We've been planning all along that tonight would just be the public hearing. And because of our schedule, we're trying as best as we can to have the deliberation and the decision at the next regular meeting next week. But since we have so many people that are testifying tonight, we get a little bit of opportunity. We're hoping the commissioners can pose any questions or follow-up issues with the public work staff. But that was our original recommendation. So we're in agreement with you, Commissioner Phillips, about once we close the oral public hearing tonight, we would like to extend written testimony to a date and time certain, and then hopefully Angie can chime in and let us know her recommendations for the specific hour and date. Okay, we have nobody presenting any oral testimony tonight, then we will close the public hearing, the oral portion, at 5:40 p.m. Angie, can you hear us still?
Yes, sir.
Does staff any recommendations regarding the date and time certain for extending the written testimony?
And correct me if I'm wrong, Amanda, we've already advertised for the May 18th next week deliberation as well as a recommendation on the road standards.
The May 19th agenda has not been posted yet. It'll be posted tomorrow though. It's been submitted for posting, but it hasn't appeared on the site. But since we have no other public hearing, you can definitely continue to the next regular meeting, which is May 19th at 5:30.
Do you leave oral open for the same period or just close oral out at this meeting?
Would be written, closing the verbal testimony of the public hearing, but keeping written record open. Given that if the goal is to deliberate on the next Planning Commission regular meeting, which is May 19th, potentially closing that on the 17th, which I believe is, the 18th, which is the Monday, correct, Amanda?
Yes.
So that information can be transmitted to the Planning Commission to review prior to deliberations on the 18th, just throwing out some timelines out there if that works for the Commission as well as Public Works.
Okay. So I've already closed the oral portion, Commissioner Beam, so if we accept staff recommendation, we don't have to do anything, but if you wanted to continue oral testimony, we'd have to.
Sorry, I'm just asking.
Yeah, sure. No, that's great. So is it the will of the commission to extend it to the next meeting, next regular meeting? So the written testimony would have to be submitted to the clerk. And are you suggesting by 5:30 p.m. then, Angie?
Typically, it's close of business. I would suggest the day before before you deliberate, so you have it in advance.
Okay.
To review.
Yeah, that works. So it'd be till the Monday at 4:30, correct?
Correct.
So we'd entertain a motion to accept written testimony through Monday, May 18th, 4:30 p.m. To the clerk. Is there a motion to approve? Or do I even need a motion? I can just continue it. Actually, I think we ought to go ahead and just pass a motion.
Yeah.
So a motion to accept written testimony, Title 11 Road Standards Code update to Monday, May 18th, 4:30 p.m.
I still vote.
Great, we have a motion to approve for a second. Okay, we have a motion second. Any discussion about the motion? Okay, hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye and raising your hand.
Aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Motion carries unanimous. Great. So now we'll go ahead and open it to, we do a lot better when we're in person, I think. Anyway, let's go ahead and open it to, I won't call it work study, but it's very similar. If any of the commission members have any follow-up questions they'd like to ask. Now, one thing I will mention, since special meetings are more restrictive than a regular meeting, and there are interpretations by the various attorneys general we've had, about what you can do, what you can't do. Generally, we can discuss any item that's not on the agenda. This is on the agenda. However, we can't take final action on any item. So even if you wanted to take action, we're precluded from taking action on this title anyway, nor are we going to. We just extended the written testimony. However, the reason I mention this is when we ask questions, please keep in mind and be careful that we're still in the public hearing process by taking written testimony. So we want to keep our opinions that are not yet formed to ourselves. So right now it's question and answer, fact finding, and any deliberation needs to await our meeting after 5:30 p.m. next Tuesday. Okay? So any commissioners, any questions?
Well, it was kind of like an advertisement for some of the drugs that are on TV. Boy, you know, you can take this drug, but, you know, side effects are it'll kill you, it'll choke you.
Anybody? I've got a few. Actually, I have several, but I'm not going to keep you here all night, so I'll cut it down. When you start disconnecting, I'll know it's time to get off the stage. Okay, and anybody chime in at any time. There's just a couple things I wanted to mention. So at the previous work study, I talked about political signs and that, and I kind of got off track, which is not unusual. But the reason I'd mentioned it was, I noticed throughout the document, there's a lot of deference given to site distance. I wanted to find out on the civil enforcement about the history. The new provision in the document refers to enforcement will be under chapter 2.116. I'm just wondering, in the past decade or so, have we had any particular enforcement issues? And the two to come to mind are on page 46. It says all subdivision lots shall access from interior roads only. I know that's generally been the case anyway, but I'm wondering if there's been situations out there where people, after the plat's been approved, subdivision's been there a while, if people are trying to do their own road approaches to the county right of way. And then, oh boy, now I can't even read my own handwriting. And then the other issue was about the, I think you put a new restriction in there that the road approaches have to be at least every 300 lineal feet, although you can require them to be more frequent. So I guess in general is just kind of a general snapshot of history. Has the Public Works Department had any major issues with the road standards? I know there have been issues with junk cars and various issues not related to the road standards.
Not really specifically that I can think of. So you asked about the political signs, and those are in the sign code.
Right.
Those are the road standards.
Right. I know Dave mentioned that, but even though I use the signs as an example, it was kind of the overarching issue of site distance. But I noticed throughout this document, there's a lot of deference to visibility and safety.
Safety is the number one priority. So you asked the question about the road approaches, and our effort is to try and have all homes in a subdivision access directly off a local access road instead of having frontage on an arterial or collector. And personally, I don't recall ever seeing where somebody is.
We have one or two. It's not a lot. People are pretty good about it. And
okay.
So the ones or twosies that we have are usually brought to our attention by neighbors. And then we'll send out our traffic investigator, and them along with Angie's code enforcement people usually do a pretty good job. And the people that do it generally don't realize that they can't. And so they're very cooperative when we ask them to, shut down an alternate approach.
So would that be an alternate approach on a higher classified road?
Correct. Yeah.
Because we do get a lot of requests for, typically each lot gets one driveway approach. And we do get a lot of requests for a second approach. Mm-hmm. And we just try and exercise, common sense. We send out a traffic investigator, or I go out, and if there's adequate site distance and, no safety issues, we generally approve them on a case-by-case basis.
And then the 300 feet that you mentioned, we're required to give everybody in their property an access. And so sometimes we can't meet that 300, but in a lot of those cases, you know, we Public Works get to see those beforehand. So we try to mitigate to the best as we can for access control, which is really a critical issue when it comes to safety.
Okay, fantastic.
So on granting that access, does that, the rules apply to private roads also?
No.
Okay.
We don't have any jurisdiction outside of a county right-of-way.
Commissioner Phillips, in Title 16, which is our subdivision code, there are private road standards. If you create X, I don't have it in front of me, but if you have so many lots, here are the standards for sidewalks, street trees, etc., for short plats as well as long plat applications coming into the system. But any frontage improvements to a public right-of-way, for example, would be triggered through the road standards before this body.
Okay, that I've noticed that many developments, new developments going in now are choosing to do private roads.
Correct, that is a trend over the years.
Okay, this one should be quick. Bonding insurance, I noticed it's 1 million per incident and 2 million aggregate. Do you happen to know, have there been any cases over the years where the claims or payouts have been larger than that, or is that pretty standard of 1 million and 2 million?
Yeah. That's the bonding level of insurance was dictated by the county's risk manager. Okay. I'm not aware of any awards related to
claim. We've never had any. I think we've gone after some bonds, but they're well under.
Yeah, it's really rare that we have had to go after somebody's bond.
Right.
Okay. Good to know. And then
it'd be a case where a developer goes out and tears into something and then just fails to, you know, walks away and fails to complete it.
Uh-huh.
That's really rare. I don't think it's happening. You know, and then once you threaten to foreclose on your bond, it really gets their attention and they get the job done.
There was one other section in there too, where the entire indemnification was taken out and I didn't see it put back in any other section. Was that something from legal? I didn't know the history of it, if it was an enforcement issue or you couldn't apply it anymore. And the only reason I mention that is, of course, you have a section on failure to construct properly. You know, if the county has to go in and fix somebody's mess, you know, if you'd want to have that indemnification. But again, I don't know if it was taken out because of an enforcement issue or if it's somewhere else. I just didn't realize it. I just noticed a strike through the entire indemnification policy.
I think that was taken out at the suggestion of our signed counsel.
Okay, good enough.
Not sure why.
Yeah, and then there were two that I wanted to make sure, at least in my mind, I can think of scenarios where they would both work well and apply together, and at times maybe they may not. And on the application, it says, the standards do not apply to roads in existence prior to adoption of these standards. And of course, that's mentioned a few times. But then on page 6, it says, existing structures with remodels greater than 50% of the assessed value of the structure in a 3-year period, the road standards apply to the entire site. And I was, trying to figure out how I can be specific about it. I'm just wondering about grandfathering, and the second item about the 50% and the remodel, would that just be applying to any new roads that are constructed? Since again, the code doesn't apply to roads in existence prior to adoption of the standards. I'm just trying to figure out when does that come into effect or what kinds of roads?
So almost two different things here that we're talking about. The first is we don't want to have to go back and get everybody in the past, you know, to change their roads and bring them up to the current standards.
Right.
So that's the first part. We're not going to go back there and retro everything else. Mm-hmm. The second part is a portion that we were missing in the old standards. There was no way for us, if somebody did a significant amount of work on their property, there was no way, unless it was a subdivision of land, Mm-hmm. We couldn't get them to do frontage improvements.
And so okay.
What we're trying to do so that they do, you know, if they tear down a building and start over, we'll have the opportunity to, you know, get them to build frontage improvements to the county standards.
Okay, perfect. That's the clarification. And then the last item I have is on the arterial roadway. The sidewalk width had been 5 feet and it's being increased to 6. And I know in other portions, there's a range up to 15. And then the local range was 3 to 5 feet, depending on whether it's urban or rural. And then you've got the planting strips, the minimum similar was 5 feet, but it's being increased to 6 feet. And I mean, it's not a critical thing. I just wanted to get a better idea of what the thinking is about increasing the minimums on those two in particular, the sidewalk and then the planting strips.
The sidewalk, I believe, came from the city-county standard. You know, the trend is for wider sidewalks to encourage walkable communities.
Okay.
I'm not sure if the basis for widening the planter strips, but certainly we have a lot of issues with planter strips mm-hmm. where there are trees because it causes the sidewalk to buckle at the curb and gutter. So we've struggled with that. And then, you know, we've come into neighborhoods and because of the trees that were planted there, we've had to cut them all down. And that doesn't make us very popular with some of the neighborhoods when we do that. But we've struggled with the planter strips. But, you know, I don't know what caused us to widen.
Another issue related to that is the driveway approaches. To get the slope, you know, to a comfortable distance, it has to have a wider distance. And so when you do that, what it does is it allows your sidewalk, if it's on, is flat going across there, to continue flat across the driveway, rather than having to go up or down or create a ramp to get down there.
Great. And I think I said that was my last one, but I promise this is the last one. So and you mentioned the road calming. And I had mentioned in the previous meeting about the history out in Hansville. And it's, again, not a big deal, but I'm wondering if have there been instances, and again, they're controversial from time to time, and you had the 70% threshold. I know in the petition you had to have, I think it was 25% signatures, and then you had to meet 5 or 6 different criteria. One is 70% approval when you send the ballots out. But I noticed a new provision in there that would require that once one of these petitions fails, you can't bring it back for 3 years. It's almost like an annexation petition. So I'm wondering, has there been an issue in the past with any petitions failing, or is this kind of foresight to put something like that in there in case there's a problem?
We've had one instance where it didn't pass. And so, you know, we wrote it off, and then, you know, the person that asked for it came back almost within a couple of months and tried to do the same thing with the same result. But we just thought it was prudent that, you know, if there's failure, you know, normally it's, you know, it's the people that live there, unless you get a lot of moving in and out, you know, the same people are probably going to vote the same way. So that was just our thought process.
Yeah, and that makes sense. And I know you did put in there, besides the 3 years, there were two exceptions to that. And I know, you know, one of them obviously is that if there's a substantial increase in traffic.
Right.
Yeah, okay, great. That's all I've got. Anybody else?
Quick question. I live in the East Bremerton urban growth area, and the philosophy that you're espousing is that the person that pays for the sidewalks is the developer. What happens when I get in annexed? Who pays for all the sidewalks that are not there now?
The city.
So you're just going to give it to the city as is?
Yes,
correct. Done it many times.
Should be an interesting discussion.
Sometimes it works the other way. Sometimes the county has invested in the sidewalks and they annex it and they take the sidewalks, you know. So whatever, when they go to annex, they're taking it in the condition that it exists when it's annexed.
But one of the things that we try to work with the cities, you know, during, before the annexations, and even the county, is that we'll, if we have a developer come in, we'll try to meet the standards of the city with those frontage improvements.
But there's an awful lot of urban growth area roads that have no sidewalks.
Absolutely.
That's correct, yeah.
They're expensive, yep.
Commissioner Beam, oftentimes in annexation issues, and I think including Mr. Brand as well as Mr. Shea and myself, we've been involved in a number of annexations here in Kitsap County, including the heyday of 2008-2009, where we saw an uptick in annexations, especially in the south end when it relates to South Kitsap Industrial Area, now something Puget Sound Industrial something, I don't know what it's called now, McCormick Woods, as well as Bethel Corridor, associated with a lot of the discussions back between the county and city is, again, part of GMA, and the overarching goal of GMA is to encourage urban areas to annex into existing cities or form its own city. But a lot of those conversations or reluctance of cities to annex is the infrastructure demand as part of that annexation and not the revenue to help support that. And we have our own challenges in our urban areas associated with that, that oftentimes what we see is our commercial corridors tend to be the revenue generating areas, and it's the residential areas that have the high service demands, the sidewalks, the safe routes to schools, et cetera. So that is definitely always a conversation with our city peers and how to encourage annexation. One method, as John mentioned, is ensuring transition through some type of urban growth area management agreement, or that's a fancy way for an interlocal agreement with a city jurisdiction to incorporate a city's design standards for roadways in addition to their zoning code. So the only example we have in unincorporated Kitsap County of that is in the Paulsbo unincorporated UGA through an ILA that is only zoning related specifically. However, there has been a lot of conversations in whether or not that should be encouraged in other associated UGAs that are attached to a particular city jurisdiction, and whether or not we should be incorporating their design standards.
And is that an ongoing discussion?
I'm sorry, our design standards are really compatible with the cities, and we have had the cities comment on our design standards. Our urban roads, really meets the requirements of all of the cities in terms of lane widths and the design criteria.
Thank you.
Yeah. Any other comments or questions? Okay, hearing none, I guess we can move on to the next agenda item. And thank you, Public Works staff. We appreciate your wonderful assistance. You guys have been extremely helpful.
Well, thank you for having us. We appreciate the opportunity. If you have any additional questions, feel free to let us know. Other than that, we'll just plan on logging on next week.
Sounds great.
Maybe we'll meet you in person sometime.
Hey, John, I don't know if we passed along a template for the findings of fact for the Planning Commission next week, but connect with me and I'll make sure you have a template for to formalize the Planning Commission recommendations, so procedurally.
Oh, so there's something I have to produce, Angie?
It should be relatively easy. I think your executive summaries has a lot of the, you know, the dates and times of what, like, for example, we want to note when SEPA was, SEPA decision, comment and appeal period, just procedural steps, as well as ultimately what the Planning Commission recommends to the commissioner. So I'm happy to work with you on that one.
So is that different than the staff report and recommendation?
Yes, sir.
Okay. All right. Well, yeah, let me know, Angie. I appreciate your help.
Yep. Not a problem.
Okay. Thank you.
Great. Thanks again.
Good
night. Okay. Next item of business is E for the good of the order. Do we have any staff announcements? Any procedural?
I'm happy to announce, I think everybody knows Liz Williams, who is a planner in our long range planning section of our Planning and Environmental Programs Division with the department. We had advertised a vacancy for a planning supervisor position to oversee long range planning activities. Through a competitive external process, Ms. Liz was determined to be the highest and best qualified applicant who applied. And as of Monday, started officially as the planning supervisor for long-range planning activities. So you'll definitely see more of Liz in an administrative as well as organizational elements of long-range planning and before the Planning Commission in this new capacity, as well as Chair Elias and Sir, you'll have Liz participate on those agenda organization conversations a lot more, as well as kind of take a more of a step back associated with that. So in addition, if you have any questions related to projects as it pertains to long range planning, feel free to reach out to Liz directly as she is overseeing all the staff and the development associated with that.
We'll pass along our congratulations to her.
Will do.
Yeah.
I think on her second day of the gig, I think she is definitely getting an experience of what it means to be a supervisor. All the curveballs thrown at you.
Angie?
Quick, yes, sir.
Angie, quick question. Is there an organization chart for DCD?
Yes, we just recently updated, and I'm happy to send a link to Amanda, that, or actually the PDF version, and send that to Amanda. She can distribute it to the group.
Wonderful.
Great. No, it's fantastic news with Liz, although we'll miss you at the agenda setting meetings. And if I could give a shout out to Angie and Dave and Amanda, they've just been fantastic throughout the year. And that brings me to my next issue. I want all of you to start thinking about serving as chairperson next year. I'm almost to the halfway point, and they'll do a fabulous job for you. So our vice chair, Joe Phillips, give it some thought. All of you.
Yeah, you can't see my hands, can you?
Great. Any other announcements?
I have a comment. Sure. Last week or last meeting, Ms. Adamson called in with a discussion about a little store that was on Trenton that she was having permit problems with. I want to thank Angie for doing a very nice job of filling us back in with the backlog of and the backgrounds of all the information that goes into that. And it turns out, in summary, that that been a little store since about 1948. And Ms. Adamson was somebody that was trying to lease the building, not the owner, and bring a public market into that space. The previous leasee got on the county's list of most sales of Sudafed in the area. And they lost their liquor license, which promptly caused them to be closed. They've been closed now for a couple of years. If you look at the UGAs, particularly in the East Bremerton UGA, most of the areas are urban low and more restrictive. There is no allowance for a little store or commercial activity in an urban low area. So she, after being shut down for 2 years, they lost their non-conforming status, and therefore they can't apply to bring that little store in there. And then all that makes perfect sense to me, but the question I think before us is it reasonable in a UGA, in an urban low area, which is most of the UGA, not to have little stores, not to have any commercial available? I grew up, there was always one down the block that I could walk to and get candy. With the way the rules are set up right now, that's not a possibility.
Thank you, Commissioner Beam. Perfect discussion, and I hope this is part of kind of the review of the use table effort in Title 17, which is our zoning code, to remove those barriers. I think, again, by the end of this month in May, we'll have a first draft that will be transmitted to the Planning Commission to start that review, as well as additional outreach efforts for folks to get familiarized with the first draft components and how that information can be brought to the Planning Commission as we move forward to ultimately a public hearing on the first draft itself. One of the questions and ideas being tossed around for that first draft is to allow at a limited scale some type of retail or commercial use in our urban low zone. Right now, the conversation is at kind of major arterial roadway classification intersections. So if you look at Ms. Adams' example, or even countywide, which this really applies to not just East Bremerton UGA, but the entire county, is whether or not that should be expanded to other lower roadway classifications. So that's something I'd like to flag for this commission to consider as we seek more public testimony on that process. In addition to just a heads up, we have talked to Ms. Adams probably the last couple weeks, both our fire marshal office as well as my staff. Ultimately, we weren't getting, we've submitted a number of requests for information, especially as we wanted to find success for Ms. Adams and through the nonconforming use route, but we needed more information to help tailor that history and again, just didn't have it available. So in conversations with Ms. Adams, instead of throwing more money at a permit, which we knew without new information, we wouldn't be able to get her to success, she withdrew her permit and we refunded her money. So working through our refund fee policies. So just a status there. Again, we're not here to gouge clients or applicants out of money for services. We're really trying for success with every application coming in within the rules that we have to follow.
I just want to thank you for giving us all the background and making sense out of the whole thing. Thank you.
Understand. Thank you, sir.
Great. Any other for good of the order items? Okay. Hearing none, entertain a motion to adjourn.
Move to adjourn.
We have a motion to adjourn. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Okay. Motion and second. All those in favor of adjournment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Motion carries. Meeting adjourned 6:10 p.m. Thank you, everybody. Look forward to seeing you next week.
Okay.
Great. Thank you, everyone. Have a good evening.
All right.
Good evening.
Night.
Thanks. Bye.
Good night. Bye.